Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Jim Teaney, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly line design and application. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Jim a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Jim Teaney about fly line design and application. Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida, in the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, an Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and it's helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. The Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects and by doing so give something back to the sport that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. For more information on the Federation, visit their website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. Before we introduce Jim, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. In our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So there's two chances you can win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered for the drawing yet, you can do so right now. Just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Jim's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Jim Teaney's latest book, which is his life's journey on fly fishing. It's titled Fly Fishing Great Waters. We'll also be giving away a Teaney hand-tied saltwater leader and also a Teaney fly line of your choice, all courtesy of Jim and Donna Teaney. And it's great of them to be so generous with these gifts tonight. So pay attention because you've got to listen to the show, and we will ask a question at the end of the show about something that Jim and I talk about. And the first person to answer the question correctly will win one of those prizes. And we'll be doing three of those questions tonight. So pay attention and use your best typing skills later in the show, and we'll see if you win. Tonight our guest is Jim Teaney. Jim is one of the first names that should come to mind when the words fly fishing innovator comes up in conversation. First, there was the Teaney Nymph, which he designed at age 16 for large cruising trout at Oregon's East Lake. And little did he realize then, as a junior in high school, how this simple fly pattern would impact his future. As he experienced growing success with the Teaney Nymph fly pattern, Jim began to experiment with different color variations of the fly and was able to increase success even on other species of fish. After keeping the fly a secret for 9 years, Jim started the Teaney Nymph Company in July of 1971. This was a startup of what is now Jim Teaney, Inc., the business which Jim and his wife, Donna, now run from their headquarters in Gresham, Oregon. Innovation has become a habit with Jim. He conceived of an idea for sinking fly lines, which resulted in his T-Series sinking tip fly lines, a concept that was welcomed all across the fly fishing community, from steelhead fly fishermen to deep water offshore saltwater fly fishermen. Jim has subsequently designed a full line of specialty fly lines that range from full floating lines to deep sinking saltwater lines. Jim has appeared on many television shows, teaching and sharing his innovations and techniques with interested fly fishers from all across our land and other countries. He has authored articles in major fishing publications and been featured in articles by other authors as well. Jim's new book, Fly Fishing Great Waters, documents the fly fishing adventures of his life with a focus on some of his favorite fly fishing spots in the world. In 1988, Jim was featured in an award-winning video, now on DVD, Catching More Steelhead, produced by Scientific Anglers. Well, Jim, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you, Roger. It's my pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure, too. You come well recommended by a lot of people. And, of course, we're all familiar with your lines, and you know everybody's excited tonight to hear straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak, about fly lines, and especially your lines, because you've produced a lot of unique ones over the years.
Well, you know, it's been fun to do that because I love the sport, and I just felt that there was some openings and, you know, gaps in the lines that we had available, and so I filled those.
Well, you sure did. Well, we got a ton of questions tonight, and thanks, everybody, for sending in your questions. Let's kind of start at the beginning, and I know this is a very broad question I'm going to ask, but I know a lot of people are probably interested in this. I certainly am. In broad strokes, can you kind of tell us what's involved in creating, testing, and manufacturing a fly line? Where does it all begin?
Well, you know, the first thing is when you're fishing specific water, you're trying to accomplish something, and if the existing lines you're using aren't working, then that's when you start cutting and splicing and, you know, chopping them up and making them fit for your needs. And that's how the T-Series really came about, is taking other lines and then, you know, working them out together so you could roll cast well and you could actually make good deliveries and consistent presentations. Then you need, you know, experiment with those lines and test them out. And then you put it on the table, and then what I did was I simplified it. Instead of making pieces of lines, I made one line. So it was now they call it integrated, you know, line, but it's taking floating and sinking lines and making them all one piece, so there's no loops and no hinging and no knots, and it's a very clean, smooth application. And plus, we color-coded them so that for the angler, you can see the color coming and know exactly where the balance of the line is, so you can either roll cast, single false cast back, and shoot the line. So it's made it really easy for all of us.
And when you say you cut and splice existing lines together to come up with a new design, you literally do that. You literally are cutting lines apart.
Well, I used to. I mean, I don't do that now because I know, you know, we started with the lines in 1983, but I had the concept about 6 or 7 years prior to that, and then I asked one of the line manufacturers if for themselves if they just make a line that was all one piece, then, you know, we wouldn't have to cut and splice, and they came back and told me that they felt that they couldn't make it, and they didn't think it would work. And so I just let it lie for, I think, about 6 or 7 years, and then when I watched technology get better, then that's when I came back to them and said, look, I want you to make these lines for me, but not for yourself or Orvis or anybody else, but, you know, this is going to be my design. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got started.
Now, I know, for instance, this is just an example, and I know you've used other professional guides and fly fishers out there, but Bruce Chard, I know you've got a line of saltwater lines that he's helped you to develop. So when Bruce was working with you, is he just out on the water and giving you a phone call and saying, here's what I found, and is there some way that that's conveyed to the manufacturer on how the line has changed?
Well, absolutely. See, Bruce is, in addition to being an excellent guide and angler, he's a great caster, and he knew from the rods that are available, you know, to match them up and what he wanted to get and the performance that he wanted to get out of the line. So he put it all together and really honestly made the nicest floating saltwater line ever made. And the taper is amazing, and the tip turns over, and even if you've got a long leader and a weighted fly there, it just goes over so nice. You know, very consistent. So Bruce really did that. Now, it took us a few times now. It wasn't like the first, wasn't a home run on the first time. So, you know, it took us about 3 or 4 different prototypes until we came up with the line. Then we knew that we needed to make a very special saltwater coating so that when it was hot and warm, the water, the line didn't get mushy. And, you know, and it started out a little stiffer than a cold water line, but then when it hit the heat, it was perfect. And that's exactly what we did, but that took a little bit of work. I mean, it wasn't just a slam dunk, if you know what I mean. It was something that we researched back and forth until we finally got it right, and they are right.
Now, like you said, you had several iterations of the line and, you know, back and forth, trying to refine it. I would think it must be pretty expensive to do a prototype because you're just making one or two lines, I suppose, and
Well, you know, it is, but, you know, we try to look at it as the, what is going to be the end run of this? I mean, if we really do come out with something that is different and is better, then, you know, that's what we want to do, because in the industry of fly fishing, in the sport of fly fishing, I absolutely love it. I mean, I'm here because I want to be here and because my heart's in it. So we want to contribute to fly fishing. We don't want to look and see somebody else's idea. Oh, that's a great idea. Let's copy it. And that's never been our philosophy. So everything that we do is our own stuff.
Okay. And that's going back to innovation is the key to your success as well. Yeah. Let's talk about, because we've got several questions here on selecting fly lines. And, you know, for many of us, this can be a big black hole. You go in there and there's shop and there's 60 fly lines to choose from. So let's start out with one question that came in is, could you point to the three most important factors when considering buying a fly line?
Well, and this is now my opinion, you know, I mean, from what, if you're going to be freshwater fishing, it's one thing. If you're going to be saltwater fishing, it's another. But let's just kind of go freshwater fishing in general. My personal choice is to have a floating line, a sink tip line, and then a sinker. And if you have a reel and you have two spare spools, you'll be able to cover from the top to the middle, you know, or down under, and then to the bottom. And so in any given lakes or streams, if they're not coming up, then you go down with a, you know, like our teeny mini tip is a great line. It's a 5-foot fast sinking tip, and it's singly my favorite line that I use. But there are times when you really need to get down deeper quicker, then we'll go to like our T-series and, you know, so we, or the tip taper, and we can really drop down in there. And quite often we fish those with shorter leaders. But in selecting lines, I think when anybody gets into fly fishing, they almost always would start out with a floating line. I mean, that would be basic because you'd learn the casting and the stroke and presentation and everything. But when you want to get deeper into fly fishing, you're going to go to the sink tips, you're going to go to the sinking lines, and ultimately you're going to come up with more bigger fish consistently.
Okay. Now, Duke in New York asks, when buying lines for specific usage, like nymphing or, you know, for check nymphing, dry fly fishing, streamer fishing, he's asking what characteristics you're looking for in each of those lines. So maybe stemming off of from what you just said, you know, let's just start out with a nymphing line. What kind of characteristics are we looking for a good nymphing line?
Well, you know what? A line that roll cast really well and see, Duke is from New York, and so I'm going to assume that he probably fishes a lot of the tribs there in the Great Lakes in the spring and fall, and I've done the same. And so when I go to the Great Lakes, for an example, I'll take our mini tip, and then I'll take our T-series or tip taper, and usually like 175 to 200 grains. Very rarely in the Great Lakes do you need more than that, but we also have one of our newer lines called the Chuck and Duck, and that line is the heaviest sink tips in the world, and they come in like 8-foot, and then they come in 12-foot. So if Duke went and fished those streams with the mini tip, which is 5-foot of fast sinking tip, and then he had the T-series, which is like 22 to 24 foot of sinking head with a built-in running line, and then he had the chuck and duck, there's probably not a piece of water in all the tribs there that he couldn't fish and fish very successfully for the steelhead, the browns, and the kings.
Okay, okay. And then what about, he asked about dry fly fishing, and I suppose streamer fishing, you're going to use some of the same lines you just talked about, right?
Yeah, in streamer fishing, he could use the mini tip and then the tip taper or T-series because they're great streamer lines. And quite often, you know, people ask, well, how long a leader should I be having on? Because we're traditionally used to using 7.5, you know, to 9-foot leaders on an average. But when we use the sink tip lines and the sinking lines, you know, we've shortened our leaders down to about 4 feet. And, you know, sometimes it's 5 or 6, sometimes it's 2 or 3. Depends on the water clarity and the water volume and how deep you're trying to get. But the shorter the leader, the deeper you get quicker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Sure, because you're letting the line do the work, not the weight of the fly or the...
Absolutely.
Yeah, or additional weight.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, you could have your line down in the bottom, and with 9 feet of leader, that the fly could be up at the surface.
It's still hanging around in another zone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What about dry fly lines?
What I use a lot of weight forward floating, you know, in our lines, but we also have a double taper. And if you're into dry fly fishing and you're fishing smaller streams and you want a more delicate presentation, the double taper always is probably going to put the fly down softer for you. And if you're not casting much over, you know, in my opinion now, 50 to 60 feet is a pretty big cast. And quite often we get a lot of fish 15, 20, 30, 40 feet out there. You know, it isn't all about the distance, you know. So I think like double taper, if you're into dry fly fishing, is still a really nice line.
Okay. I know we were talking with Simon Gosworth about that. He really loves the double taper for single-handed.
Oh, he does? Okay.
Yeah,
sure.
For single-handed spey casting is his ticket on that. Stan Wright in Honolulu, Hawaii, asks, he says, he has several bamboo fly rods from his father and grandfather. He'd like to, try them out, but he's got no idea what weight the rods are or what fly lines to use. How would he go about trying to figure out what line is proper for those?
Well, you know what? I think for Stan there, this is just, and I'm only guessing because I really don't have the rods in hand where I can test them. But if they're 7.5 foot or they're 8 or they're 8.5 foot or, you know, the length of the bamboo rod kind of makes a little deal. If they're shorter, chances are they're lighter. They could be for 4 weights or 3 weights or 5 weights. And probably the best thing to do, and then knowing that bamboo is a softer, slower action and the rod's a little heavier than what we're used to, you know, as opposed to graphites, then at that point, if he knows anybody or has a shop around, quite often if he took the rods in there, they might let him try to cast, you know, some different lines. And that would be the way, because it's really what feels good to you and doesn't overload the rod, because I think in bamboo, you really don't want to overload the rod. You just want it to be real comfortable and you can feel all the action and your presentation down there. But, and then if it's a bigger rod and maybe it's got a couple of tips. Sometimes they had one that have a stiffer tip and one will have a softer tip. You know, if he has one like that, then that's two different actions. So you got to really tailor it into, it's a great question, a little difficult to be specific for him.
I think you gave a good answer. I think most shops have reels with line on them and they could help try to figure it out, I think, and be happy to because the...
Sure.
You know, they'll end up selling them a line at the end of the day if they can help him out. So that's really the only way is put the line on the rod and give it a try, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And here's another question by Greg in Breckenridge, Colorado. He's kind of the reverse. He's got a bunch of lines, but not sure what they are and what they match up to. Is there any way to tell what weight a line is without any markings on it or knowing anything?
You know, it's pretty difficult. Once in a while in the past, I've had the same issues that he's stated here about that there are several old but good lines. And, you know, just because they're old doesn't mean they're not good lines. I mean, you know, so it's pretty much the wear and tear and whatever has happened to them and the quality of how they were made. So I've got some lines on some of my reels. I've had them for, 20 years, you know, so you never know. But for him, I think he's going to need to actually test them, you know, and see what feels good and loads up the rods and balances with them, because it's going to depend on his rod also. I mean, having all those lines and matching them up, I just think he needs to go to a shop and find out and ask, guy, look at here's some lines. Can you kind of tell by looking? Well, yeah, that looks like a 5 weight, or they'll say, well, this could be a 6, or and then get a rod of that weight and cast it, and if you're happy with the performance, then you've got a good balance. And I just want people to know that the difference between a 4 weight and then a 5 weight and then a 6 weight is really not all that great. You know, then you get to a 7 weight, and I believe that the biggest change that I see in lines is from a 7 weight to an 8 weight, because an 8 weight, then you're starting to get in the big guns. You know, the steelhead, salmon-type lines. So, but there's not a lot of difference between some of those, like between a 4 and a 5 or between a 5 and a 6. It's pretty close.
Okay, Martin Coleman in Lawrence, Kansas asks, he says, can you talk a little bit about matching lines to fly rods to identify the best load and casting? And then also a second part of his question is, what are some of the biggest advances in fly lines you've seen since you began fishing and developing fly lines?
Well, okay. Well, those are good questions. And what I like to do when I'm matching a line to a fly rod, and say if the rod said it was an 8 weight, I have no problem in going to a 9 weight. You know, I mean, if you really would like to load your rod, and plus if you're in windy conditions where you really want to feel the flex of the rod and let the rod do a lot of the work, going up one size is not a problem. You'd never want to go down. You would never have an 8 rod and have a 7 line. And I'm not saying that you couldn't cast it, but you're not going to get the full performance from the rod that you would if you went the other way. You know,
okay.
So either you get an 8 weight and you stay in balance with what the rod, but I personally believe that the rod manufacturers underrate most of their rods. So, like if it says it's an 8, it could easily be a 9, and you know what, you could probably even throw a 10 weight line on it. You know, so it's not that critical, but you want to go on the upside rather than the downside of that. And then some of the biggest advances in fly lines that I've seen is, I believe, I mean, this might sound low, they're coming up with very new center cores, and the center cores have a bigger value when it comes to warm saltwater fly lines, like mono cores and braided mono and whatever, because we've always had like Dacron core, you know, for our cold water traditional lines. But now finding that those are really good lines is a big deal, but you also factor in tapers. And your taper of your line is very important to your castability with your rod. I mean, everybody casts a little bit different, so one guy's stroke might not fit the other guy. And so, you know, you got to find the line that is really comfortable with you. And when I've been designing our teeny lines, you know, since 83, I've really tried to make things simple. I've tried to make it so they're high performance, minimal false cast, and boom, you're out there. And so that's been my goal on that. And another thing is the fly line industry has been making some exceptional coatings. And the coatings are the finish of the lines are very critical, very important, and they're hitting some home runs here. So I think all the line manufacturers are doing a good job on that.
So you talked about core. They're coming out with different cores now?
Yeah. Instead of just all being in the Dacron type, because, see, our cold water lines, when you hit hot water, you know, warm water, like 70, 80, 90, whatever, then at that point, our cold water lines become very relaxed, and sometimes the coatings would actually become a little sticky or a little tacky. And so if you know you're going to be fishing saltwater like where Bruce Chard is out of Big Pine Key, then you really want to have a saltwater line, you know, with that saltwater coating, the warm water coating, not the cold water coating that we have.
Okay.
You see? So, I mean, that's really important. And it isn't the point that, honestly, that we're trying to sell another line, but if a guy's taking a big trip and he's going there and he really wants to have the best casting and the best performance that he can do, then he really needs to step up and get a good line because it could make the difference in his presentation and his success rate.
Okay, Jim, we need to take a quick break here, but we'll be right back and talking more about fly line design.
All right.
Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 25 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging on to their website at www.frontrangeanglers.com. It's www.frontrangeanglers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Jim Teeny about fly line design and application. If you'd like to ask Jim a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Jim, before we dive back in to talking about fly lines, tell us a little bit about what's going on in your fly fishing world, what's going on with your company, and any other things you're involved with.
Well, you know, we've been, the economy is tough. Everybody knows that. But we're actually trying to bring in, we've got some new products, new designs, new everything. We're actually trying to step it up because we feel that, God willing, we're going to get out of this, you know, and get through it, and we want to be there, you know, for the anglers and for our company when that time comes. So, like, just for an example, a Temple Fork Outfitter rods, TFO rods. I designed two really nice fly rods with them 4 or 5 years ago, and they just recently turned those over to us. So we're going to be the sole distributor for the world with the Jim Teeny signature rods. One's a 9'4" piece, the other one's a 10'5" piece, and they're just outstanding. I mean, you know, they're everything that I wanted to do in a rod. They let me take it from the beginning, and, you know, brand new blank, brand new taper, brand new everything, and never been happier with using those. And then we're going to be putting together a fly rod like a kit. We have a fly rod, reel, line, instructional DVD, and introductory level type thing, you know, and we should do that in a 5-weight and an 8-weight. And we also have got some two new lake lines that will be coming out shortly in the intermediate. And then we're working on a brand new line with Bruce Chard that I really can't disclose yet. But honestly, Bruce is so excited about it. He says, Jimmy, he says, this could just take the whole saltwater market. So we're in the process of getting prototypes probably within the next couple weeks. So those are just some of the things we're on to.
Okay, great, great. And what's your website address so people can find out about your products and what you're up to?
It's www.jimteeny, that's JimTeeny.com. Okay. And that'll bring you into our website.
Great, great, terrific.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that with us. Okay, we've got a question in here from Jim in Jefferson City, Missouri. He says, would you please discuss in detail the process by which rods are rated for specific line weights by manufacturers and what practical application this has for anglers? It seems like the load placed on a rod is different when you use a roll class than it is when you do an overhead cast, and adding split shot and leader would change things as well. In theory, at least, it would seem that you could use split shot. You could use a lighter line weight to offset the additional weight of the split shot. He's got some good questions there.
Absolutely.
About all the parts and pieces that we deal with there.
Well, you know, I'd like to help answer, Jim, you know, the best that I can on this. And every rod manufacturer is probably a little different. They'll look for a soft action, a medium action, medium fast, or a fast action rod. And some of the really fast action rods don't feel as good when you're casting because they're a little stiff. And I've really kind of been more a medium fast to fast in that where I liked, when I designed our rods, I put a very strong lower butt section, a very stiff but a sensitive tip. So when you're actually casting, whether you're roll casting or you're overhead casting, the rods don't collapse on you. You know, they hold up, and when you're coming back, whether either you just do a single haul, and then, or if you did a double haul, which we rarely really need a double haul, but if you did, the rod won't collapse down on you. That's where the softer action rods, they just won't perform as well. And here he's asking, and this is really a great question about split shot. Split shot throws you way out of balance, and I used to do it, and it is quite deadly, but that's why I developed our teeny lines, the mini tips, the T-series, the chuck and duck, because right now in the last, I can't tell you how many years, I no longer carry split shot with me, and we're very, very successful in getting down quickly to the fish. So except in extreme pocket water, big boulders, fast water, I don't believe that now there's a need to have to add split shot because it throws you totally off balance. You know, you're casting, you don't want to hit your rod with a split shot, and of course you don't want to hit yourself either. But split shot is, and I'm not saying it's not effective because I know it is, and that's how I really pretty much learned to fly fish, because way back, you know, in the 60s, we didn't really have a lot of options. You know, I mean, on what we should be doing or using. And so if you needed to get the fly down, we put a split shot about 30 inches up from the fly, and it was crude, but it did work. You know, and it's still working today. But a lot of people get a hold of us and say, you know what, I don't want to use split shot anymore. I don't want to use an indicator. Tell me more about your lines, and that's where our lines come in.
Okay. We've got a couple questions that came in on the Internet here. One, maybe you can tell us what you think. Ken sent in, he says, answer the line weights. Weigh the first 30 feet in grains and use the ASME standard chart for line weight. Is he right on that one?
Yeah, and pretty much they do. And the first 30 feet is how they rate them and the grain weights. But also, I just want to mention one thing. that when we did our T-Series lines, like say for example a T200, so it gets a little confusing for the consumer. We did our grain weights, and then we put rod sizes that we said they could use them on. And I was, years ago, and I'm not trying to make this long or winded, but I was on the Kenai River in Alaska fishing for king salmon. And I started out with a T300. It was too much line, and I was snagging up. I wasn't even getting a 5-foot drift. Boom, I'm on the rocks. But you could see these big kings rolling coming up. So I went to a 200 thinking that would help, and I still was snagging up. I went to a T130, which is rated for 4, 5, or 6 weight rod, and I threw it on my 10 weight rod, and I absolutely hammered the kings on that. Totally off balance. I mean, the line still is balanced, but it would not load the rod, but it would cast very well. So when you look at lines, knowing that our T-Series and Tip Taper Series, it isn't like it's for one specific rod. You can use them for many different sizes. You could take a 200 and throw it on a 6 weight up to a 10 weight and not have a problem. And the same with a 300. So I just want people to know that when the color change and you have the balance at your rod tip, you can get that line to the surface, single false cast back, hesitate, and then just shoot it, and it's gone.
So what you're saying about Ken's suggestion here is that's a rule of thumb, but there are many more other applications that override that.
Yeah, well, Ken's accurate in what he's saying there, you know, about the grains, but I don't want people to think that you have, it's like a Bible and you have to
right.
go by it, because if you look at the line manufacturers, it's getting more difficult all the time for people. They're measuring lines in different ways. They're trying to change the rods now for this and that, you know, what they're saying. And I love to keep things simple. And I don't like it to get too complicated so that everybody can understand, you know, what they're doing and be specific on what they're getting.
Okay. Here's a couple other questions came in on the Internet. Ken Prager in Pennsylvania. He says, what's your suggestion for a sinking line and tip length to use in rivers running 1,000 CFS and above?
1,000's pretty rolling along there. And if he's not casting very far, you know, if he's casting less than 40 feet, you know, and quite often in the, like Elk Creek, Walnut Creek, and Cattaraugus and all that stuff, the chuck and duck line is really excellent. But also, the, like a Tip Taper 175 or a T200 with a short leader, I think would be perfect. And 1,000 is moving right along, so if he knows that he's got some smaller streams, fast current, deep slots, likes to drop down, get right down to their level, then I would say the chuck and duck and probably a heavy or a magnum would be good. Those are the 8-footers, not the super heavy or the super magnum, which are 12-footers, but just the heavy and or the magnum. And they're seeing the heavy now weighs out to 380 grains in 8 feet, and the magnum is 530 grains. But, you know, I mean, so let me tell you, they drop like rocks, but they're deadly. But they're not a beautiful casting line. Nobody's going to tell you you made a good cast. You know, you know what I'm saying?
So, yeah.
You know, but it does get the job done when you want to get down deep and you don't want the split shot and the indicators and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Got to ask this question because before he falls asleep, Steve in Vienna, Austria. It's got to be early in the morning there.
Oh, okay. Oh, sure.
He says, why are there so many tapers? What do the different taper properties do to casting characteristics, short belly versus long belly lines, etc.? How do the AFTMA weight classes come into that? If I cast 30 feet, they certainly apply, but what for fishing situations I am constantly closer, farther away? So I guess, is, you know, he asks, the basic question is, why are there so many tapers? So maybe you can address that.
Well, you know what? I think that everything is like, you'd probably say, I'm just going to be open and honest here, like clothes. You go in and you look at clothes and there's a lot of different shirts, a lot of different pants and everything like that. And I think our market is pretty well flooded out with a lot of different things. You know, we've got different colors, different tapers. The shorter tapers are really made, in my opinion, I think for, you know, not the longest casts in the world, but quick casts, where you can actually respond really quick, and maybe they'll roll cast quite nicely and everything. But when you get to the long belly, you get the longer back taper, those are more high-performance distance line. But one thing that I want people to know is that most of the time it's not the distance of your cast, but it's the presentation of your fly. So in anything that we do, if you could only be a good caster at 40 feet, but you make good presentations, you may hook more fish at 40 feet than the guy throwing 70 or 80. Does that make sense? You know, so don't get caught up in distance, because every time, you know, if you're at a sports show and you see somebody casting, he's going to try to put it over the rail. And it is impressive to watch. And the time that we've needed the longer cast, and so you can get more, is basically on saltwater, in saltwater flats fishing. But other than that, when you're freshwater fishing, and I think the shorter cast, and I'm not saying that it's not an advantage to learn to cast distance, but I believe that most of your fish are caught less than that.
Okay. Now, we've got to take a break here real quick, and
okay.
Then come back and we'll chat some more. So.
Okay.
Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Jim Teeny about fly line design and application. If you'd like to ask Jim a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Jim, you still there?
Oh, you
okay.
Bet.
Yeah, I heard something bleep there. So, okay, we've got a question here from Robert in Maine. He says, I know you offer several different fly lines, but I heard you also offer some high-end saltwater leaders that are hand-tied. I will be fishing in the Florida Keys for permit, tarpon, and bonefish next spring. What kind of saltwater leaders do you have to offer? And that's one of the things we're giving away tonight, right?
Yeah, and that's a really good question. And how we came about those is we went to our professional people that are in our fly lines that have designed their own tapers, such as Bruce Chard. You know, and long story short, they designed these lines and they knew exactly materials, everything they wanted to do. And then we had them hand-tied custom, and they are the best leaders. And all of our professionals came back to us and said, we can't even tie them this good. So, you know, we use the highest grade of, you know, either fluorocarbon or tiger wire, whatever that, you know, they're doing, and made them, you know, very, very good. So Bruce Chard has a shark barracuda. He's got a bonefish line, tarpon leaders, and, I mean, really good stuff. So if you went to the website, you'll see all that we have. And then Pat Ellers has got pike muskie and, you know, some really other, and bass leaders. So we're pretty proud of these leaders, and we have had nothing but good comments on them.
Okay. And speaking on leaders, do you still, you know, I know it used to be the thing to have leader stretchers and so forth for saltwater leaders. Is that still something that's necessary, or are they necessary with your leaders?
Well, you know what? The section where, you know, you put the fly on is stiffer. And so if you were using a tarpon leader, it's straight in our packaging. So we didn't. It's not bent or kinked. Because it's nice, and then the other part straightens out right away. It's coiled, but it'll straighten right out. So I don't know so much that you need a leader stretcher, but, you know, if you wanted to, you certainly could, you know, give a couple pulls, and I wouldn't believe that you'd have any difficulty with that.
Yeah, okay. That kind of tells me that you should be storing, you know, when you're done for the day, storing those leaders properly. In other words, store them
sure.
Where you received them rather than coil up that end of the leader and getting it into a memory situation.
Sure.
Yeah. You kind of talked about this, but maybe we can address it some more. He says, I am a beginner. What is the benefit of using a weighted line over lead weight?
Well, you know what? Being a beginner in a weighted line is once you learn to work the line, you'll enjoy it so much more than using a lead weight. And here's the reason, because it's awkward casting with a lead weight, for example. You know, I mean, it's you're plunking it out there and you don't really have that quality control that you'd like to have. But with a line, you can make that presentation, make the cast, throw the mends in the line. You can absolutely do well with making good presentations. You're not worried about hitting your rod or yourself. And then also, here's the difference. If, for example, you were using an indicator and you had a little lead on there, you know, down low by the fly or whatever, you're watching your indicator or your bobber, and you're watching it going down, where well, then you see it, and then you set the hook, and then you hook a fish, right? With our lines, we dead drift them, and you quarter cast upstream or straight out, let it sink, and then just swing through. And when you get a strike, it's awesome, because you feel the grab, and, you know, I mean, that's what I love mostly about fly fishing, to be honest with you, is I love the take or I love the grab. It's where you set the hook and say, there he is, fish on. You know, that to me is the most exciting part of it, whereas with the indicator, you know, you're kind of watching, and you're not really improving on your fishing skills. You're watching your indicator, where with lines, and you start working the lines, you'll love it. I mean, I don't think anybody that's gotten into that would not say that they enjoyed it.
Yeah, you're more got a direct,
oh,
no pun intended, a direct line to the fish that way without
that was good.
Indicator. okay, we've got Mike in Sarasota, Florida. He says, thanks, Jim, for everything you've done for the fly fishing industry. He says, my question is about your professional series fly lines. I have a number of Bruce Chard fly lines that you offer and love them. They are absolutely best casting saltwater lines I've ever fished. What makes them so superior to other saltwater lines that I've used? Is that a trade secret?
No. And really what it is, what Mike is saying, is when Bruce designed the lines, he designed a very, very special taper on that line. And then when we hit the saltwater coating, you know, for the warm saltwater, that combination has made Bruce's line excel from all other lines. It really is a standalone line. So when, you know, I mean, by golly, when we're going saltwater fishing, we got a Bruce Chard line on. But it's in the taper that he did, because you can actually, if you're a good caster, you can actually pull 60 or 70 feet of his line off the water, single false cast back, slightly hesitate, and then shoot it forward and go out 90 or 100 feet. And the line's a 100-foot line. I mean, it can be done. We've done it time and time again. In most lines, you would not be able to do that.
Okay, great. So. Okay, and this probably you've answered already, but let's run it by you in case there's something else you want to add. Ava,
sure.
In Los Angeles, California, says, what is the difference between freshwater sinking line and saltwater non-tropical sinking line? Non-tropical, okay. For surf fishing, what would you recommend? So I think he's talking maybe Northern California, up Oregon way kind of thing for salt. Huh?
Yeah, you know what? It says, what is the difference between a freshwater sinking line and a saltwater, a non-tropical sinking line? And I'm going to be honest with him, there is no difference.
Because you're not dealing with
that. Because if you're in cold water, see all of our T-series, all of our TS series, the tip tapers, everything will work in saltwater non-tropical. So for surf fishing, what would we recommend? Well, it all depends on how deep he wants to get and what weight of the rod that they're using. You know, I mean, if she's using like a 8-weight rod or a 9 or 10-weight rod, then I think I just match up the grain weights. And if it's a kind of a rocky area but it drops off quick, you know, anywhere between a T300, T400. But if you want a little more distance, I'd go to the TS series, because the TS series has 30-foot head and 70 feet of running line. And so that longer head, if you're a good caster, you can come back and hesitate and shoot the line. It'll go like a rocket, you know. But for most fishing, we use the 22 and 24-foot heads in rivers and streams. But in the ocean, what they're asking, I think it would be better to have a TS series.
Okay. Jay in Lafayette, Louisiana says, Jim, the teeny flip pallet line was my favorite line when sight fishing for redfish in South Louisiana. Looking on your website, it looks like it's been discontinued. Is there any plans to reintroduce it, or do you have a replacement for that line?
Well, you know what? Flip actually gracefully bowed out, you know, being a professional in our line. But everybody started to like the flip lines, and the timing was kind of poor for us because his lines became really popular. So what we did is we took the orange line, which he had a white and he had the orange, but the orange was becoming way more popular because you can see it. And, you know, with fish looking up, I mean, they only see the shadow. But for an angler or a guide, it was easy for them to tell where to cast. So we are making that line in orange and offering it, and it's our saltwater sight line. So it is still available.
Okay.
But it's in our Jim Teeny name.
And called the salt, and would you say the
saltwater sight line?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Duke. Again, Duke asked a lot of questions tonight, New York. What is the best setup for fly fishing under 40 feet casting distance he's talking about for a line? What type, profile, weight forward, double taper, rod length? I guess he's trying to zero in on that kind of target area you were talking about, which is the 40 feet and under, I think.
Yeah, and it's really a great, I mean, usually when I'm in the Great Lakes area, we're definitely very rarely casting over 40 feet, you know, and like Oak Orchard, we might lay a 50, 60 footer out there, but mostly not, you know, and I think that I would stay with a weight forward type floating and then and or the T-series type or the tip taper type because they're just so easy to handle because the standard shooting head used to be 30 foot, but for most of us, that was a lot of line to aerialize and get out there. And I did a lot of cutting and splicing way back, you know, years and years ago and found that if your head is 20 feet or longer, then you can handle the line amazingly. You know, well, I mean, you bring up the color change, you roll cast it, you can do everything you want. But if you have a head, for an example, that's 30 foot, it really takes a lot more effort to get that extra 6 or 8 feet, you know, going. So I would stay with the tip taper or the T-series, and then, of course, if he's under 40 foot, don't throw out the possibility of having a chuck and duck because there are times when the water comes up and the water volume's really ripping along and, you know, maybe had a big rain or something like that, man, that chuck and duck line will drop right in the zone so quickly. But there's also times when it's too much. You know, it'll get down too quick. Then he'd be on the bottom all the time. So that's my answer.
Okay. another question from Duke. What is your opinion on loop-to-loop connections, line leader, running line, and shooting head tips, and energy transfer during the cast? And I know this question has come up on other shows with us. Are there better solutions to connecting all these different sections of the line and leader system to allow relatively quick change-up?
Well, you know, that's why I came out with our T-Series back in 1983 is because I was trying to advance fly lines and fly design, simplify fly fishing, and that's why I made the one-piece lines. So it eliminated all the loops, the hinges, and then in addition, of course, you know, I color-coded the line so you knew where the balance was. You weren't guessing. You know how you could roll cast it or control the line or shoot it out. And I just think, in my opinion, that there's nothing better than a one-piece balanced line. Because when you start looping heads and you start changing with things like that, the loops are a hinge point. There's just no question about it. But the loops eventually wear out, and then when you're fighting a fish, and then it's going click, 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 and then it runs out again, click, 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 back and forth. Man, I'm telling you, you know, you don't know about your leader strength and your everything, and sometimes they could get caught up or hung up a little bit. So I'm really not a loop guy.
Okay. What about loop-to-loop connection between line and leader?
Same you know,
thing?
you could do that, and I used to do that, but I've got a knot that I do, and I do a nailless nail knot, and of course we have our butt section there, and I just kind of like to do that, but there's not a problem in doing loop-to-loop on the line to the leader,
okay.
You know, if a person likes to do that. What I'm doing is a little bit cleaner, probably I'm not going to say it's smoother, because there's that little, you know, knot there. But I trim it down nice, and it really holds well. It doesn't really fail me.
Okay. Let's see. Harold in New York State asks, why have you centered your design activities around lines for single-handed fly rods only? Is this a conscious decision, or what are the driving reasons?
Well, you know what? I've always been a single-handed person, and now, you know, rods, double-hand rods are becoming, you know, quite popular. But one thing that a lot of people really didn't know, but back in 1983, when we started our line designs, then we started selling in Europe. We were back before a couple of the popular line companies now were even in existence. We were making spey lines, but we were making them for Europe. So, I mean, being the fact that we do have some spey lines, but we don't have it extensive and a lot of it, and I guess it's personal, but I really, you know, I love the single hand rods. I love how they cast and how they fish, and I love fighting fish on a single handed rod, but it's not saying that down the road, I mean, because we're open to what our business and our customers are looking for, so we could well get back into that again, but we used to make thousands of them, you know, but it was all going to Europe.
Yeah, it does seem to be catching on more and more. People are using a two-handed more and more. Okay, we've got, let's see what we have online here. John, Dayton, Ohio asks, how does casting technique vary between casting floating lines and sinking tip lines?
Well, you know, we cast in a floating and a sink tip. Like a floater is the line that you would first start with, and it's a line you'll always see when you cast, and it'll always be surface. And a sink tip line is a little bit different, especially if you went to like the mini tip, you know, the one that's our 5-foot sink tip. And I love the line, but I think you do the same stroke, but you know that there's going to be just a little bit of maybe a minor kick at the end. But when you get into the T-series and the tip taper type series, they're going to blow you away, because if you ever want some distance and you want to get down quick, there's nothing like those lines. They are superbly balanced. And that's what I did. I mean, that's why there is a difference, though. Floating line, you're always going to see it, and it's all on the surface. And usually, traditionally, a floating line outlasts a sinking line, you know, I mean, 5-1, I would say, easy. Because it doesn't go through all the rocks and the abuse and the stretch and, you know, and all that stuff. But there's a difference in casting them. But I would just say that you just don't want to just stay with a floating line. You need to venture into sink tips and sinking lines. It'll change your world, and I believe that you're going to catch more bigger fish consistently.
Now, Dave Baumgartner in Whiston, Utah asks, he says, we often fish pre-spawn browns in larger rivers. They stack up in 6-foot deep water with a semi-fast current and hold right on the bottom. Often our rigs are weighted with several medium-sized sinkers, including an indicator to adjust depth and just tick the bottom. So can I replace this rig with a chuck and duck line or one of the others Jim mentioned?
Absolutely. Yeah, probably I would say I'd look into the chuck and duck and maybe one of the tip tapers. Now, they come in different grain weights. They come in like 175, 275, 375, and 475. So, like, you know, the 475 pretty much is for a 9 or 10-weight rod. So I would not assume that he's using a rod that probably an 8-weight or 6 or 7. So, I, you know, any of the other three would be good. And then the chuck and duck, I would tell him either a heavy or the Magnum or both. They're great lines. He will not have to put the split shot on.
Okay, another couple good, great questions coming in tonight. A couple more on the Internet here, Jim.
Sure.
Eric in Lebanon, Pennsylvania asks, I kind of notice how some companies don't make sinking lines for anything under 6 weight. Are there any sinking lines you make for 3-4 weight rods?
Yeah, we actually make our mini tip in a 3-weight, and we have done that for, you know, I mean, the weight forward floating with a 5-foot fast sinking tip comes in a 3-weight on up, and then our, we have a basic sink, which is a 20-foot head and 40 feet of floating, all one piece. It's like the T-series, but shortened, and it's very affordable line. It's, you know, and we make it in 100 grains, 200 and 300, but the 100 grain one works on 3-5 weight rods. And then we have our T-series in the 130 grain, which is a full 90 foot line, and that one fits 4-5 and 6 weight rods, you know, balanced. So we did address the lighter rods because, yeah, I know a lot of guys have 3s and 4s and want to use them, and so that's what we did.
Okay, great. Okay, another quick break here, and we'll be right back. Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com and view the fishing products and guide services they have to offer in both Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, visit www.dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Jim Teeny about fly line design and application. If you'd like to ask Jim a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, we've got, Bob Nunn in Sutherland, Vermont asks, when might it be beneficial to use modern silk fly lines? Do you know anything about those?
I really don't.
Okay.
Bob, you got me.
Okay, we'll pass on that. Thomas,
I'm sorry.
Site George, Utah. What kind of lines are best for still waters, and what are the situations you use them in?
Well, you know what? A floating line, of course, if they're coming up and they're rising, is always a good line. We use our mini tip quite often, the 5-foot sink tip. Quite often we'll start out with the mini tip and we'll never take it off all day long because it fishes a little drop-offs and over weed beds and places. But we've also been finding that now this time of year, we were just out yesterday and we had to get deep. We had to use the T-130 and the T-200 to get down to 15, 20 feet where the big ones were cruising. And then we hooked them. So I think as you look at your seasons, and you know, springtime and fall, the water's colder, and you don't need to go down as deep, but during July, August, September, you probably do to be more consistent on the bigger fish. So I think now what we're doing right now is we're working on two brand new lake lines that are intermediate sink, you know, very slow sink, and they're going to have what we're going to call the out-of-sight tip. So it's going to be very low visibility and fairly clear, so that what those tips do is add to the length of your leader. And so like if you had a 5-foot, we're going to have a 5-foot and then we're going to have a 25-foot. But we did a lot of research and everything and realizing that an all clear line is not a really good line because the angler loses control of the sight and everything about the line. And don't worry about the retrieving and say, well, you got a floating and then you got 25 foot of sinking and now you're bringing it back and the angle is changing. That's way too technical. Know that the 25 feet that's sinking is going to drag some of the floating down, so your form and distance and direction of retrieve is going to be coming back quite nicely. But you're also going to be able to know where your balance of the line is, how far you're out, when you can pick it up and roll it to the surface, make another cast. So there's nothing but advantages to the sinking head type lines.
Okay, great. Let's see, we have Joe in Wilmington, North Carolina. He says he used to live in Whidbey Island.
Oh, yes, right. That's in Washington there.
Mm-hmm. And fished in the Olympics. He enjoyed watching your videos and so forth and books. He said, I enjoyed fishing the sole duck and queets, and always found that I needed to go with a longer leader and at least a 250 grain sink tip in the late spring. However, in the early spring runoff seemed to make it much more difficult to get that line down to those big steelheads. Do you have a better recommendation than a 250 grain sink tip for that situation?
Well, and then the TS series, we make a 250, 350, 450, all the way up to a 750. And I would imagine, because he's fishing river with those for big steelhead there, and there really are some magnificent fish there. And I fished out there in the Forks area, so I know what he's talking about. When I did my Catching More Steelhead video with Scientific Anglers back in 86, 87, they said I could use two of our lines, and I used the Teeny Mini Tip and the T-400. And I found the 400 to be really good in the wintertime and also good in the summertime with low clear water. It was one of those lines where you think, well, God, it'd be a lot of line, it'd be too much line, and sink too fast in the summer, but that's not true because, you know, they're in these currents and these little deeper runs and they're down on the bottom and, you know, you can see them and you want to get down to them. So I would tell him that if he likes how the T-250 casts, to maybe jump up to about a 450. And that would be really, I mean, that would be quite a difference between the 250. I mean, it's 200 grains more. He'll definitely get down quicker.
Okay. Okay. Yep. Jerry in Orangeville, Ontario, says, I have always liked and preferred double tapered lines, and I am disappointed in the difficulty in purchasing such. I believe weight forward lines are shoved down our throats because of economics, less profits with double tapers. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't think that's the reason. I just think that it's everybody now, I mean, you know, and I don't know why, but in golfing, you know, it's how far did you drive the ball, and you know, in casting and fly, it's how far did you cast the line. And so, you know, he's got a really good point there. But it isn't about the profitability and everything. I think everybody, because the rods have become faster action, and everybody's like, you know, weight forward, you know, bass bug tapers, whatever, and they're all trying to shoot it out there further. Not that they're going to catch any more fish. So, you know, his thoughts on, and he likes double tapered lines, is totally normal, not an absolute problem. We do have some double tapered lines that are actually quite nice, and I believe they're in a sage color. And a lot of guys that actually do have bamboo rods really like the lines. And the advantage of a double taper is you can fish one side, wear it out, reverse it, and you got a brand new side. Because they are perfect lines, you know, on each side the same balance.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, another question. Kevin from Plainfield, Illinois says, what does the future hold in regards to the new generation of raised surface fly lines like Airflow Ridgeline or the Scientific Angler Sharkskin? He says, I have the shark skin on a four-way and it casts a mile, but it sure does cut a nice groove in my finger.
Well, you know, I know what he's saying, and I think that if people really don't get caught up on that they have to cast 80 to 100 feet, there's a lot of good lines out there. There's a lot of great lines. Our distance line that we like is our, it's called our long shot. It's a beautiful line, and there's people I like over in, I think it was Iceland, there's guides and out, that's the only line they'll use is our long shot. And they love it. You know, so it's got a longer rear taper though, long, you know, so it's a very, very high performance line. And I don't know, you know, it's, I guess it's to each your own, but gosh, spending $100 for fly line's quite a bit. And if you're not going to get that much more out of it, I don't know, it's better to go get two $50 ones and, you know, or $60 ones and you've got an option there.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like you're not too sold on these new raised surface lines, though.
Well, you know what? They make noise. Not only can they groove your finger, but they can groove your guides if you don't have good guides on there.
Mm.
You know, so there's... But I know they shoot like a rocket. You know, I mean, so that's what he's saying, cast a mile. And, you know, if that's what you're into, absolutely more power to you. But if you want something that feels good, doesn't make a lot of noise, and, you know, and it wouldn't cut into your finger, then I'd kind of get back to the... I think a really good, smooth surface that your fingers kind of glide over is a really nice line, because there's not a lot of resistance going through the guides. And if you have oversized, when I designed our rods, I designed oversized snake guides on there. So there's very minimal restriction when you're casting. And the lines just go through. They're really nice. Whereas sometimes in years past, you'd see little or tinier guides. Well, that's more restriction, and you're not going to cast as far or shoot as good. So,
okay, another question. Joanne in St. Louis Obispo, California, says, most fly fishers in the deep south use level lines, yet I've never seen them out west. Are there any applications you can think of for a level line? And also, what's the latest line design you've got on the market, and what else are you working on?
Okay. Well, I can answer the first part of this really quick. A level line is what a lot of the people used to use, and maybe some of them still do on the Great Lakes area when they do the chuck and duck. You know, when they put split shot on their leader and they throw it out, and a level fly line is all the same diameter from the beginning to the end, no taper, and they just kind of overhand and sling it out there. Another application for a level line is to put it on behind a shooting head. And that's what I did in the beginning when I was cutting and splicing. I'd take a level line and then trim down a line and make a shooting head. But I had that Albright knot there, you know, where the head and the floating came together, which if you stripped it in too far, it would always catch up on your guides. So you always had to remember to leave it beyond your rod tip. And so let's see. the latest design and lines? Well, the ones that we're working on, the lakes, are we're pretty excited about because those are going to be new lines for us. And it was an area that we were missing in. Those intermediate, you know, clear tip lines was the one thing that we needed to add in. So now we have floating lines, sink tip lines, intermediate, slow sink. We've got sinking lines, saltwater, freshwater. So it'll give us the full spectrum of lines.
Okay, okay. We've got Joe Ray and up on the Kenai River where you've been.
Yeah, it's great.
He says, what do you consider to be your best line to fish deep salt water for like lingcod and halibut and tuna? He says, I use a Loomis 15 to 16 weight and Abel Ross series.
Sure.
Rods. I built a deep water express 850 grain heads into 100 running line into 50-pound spectra. Appreciate your suggestions on which teeny line you would recommend. Do you have a line for that situation?
Yeah, well, you know, when years ago we were up in Alaska, we were out of Seward, and my wife, she had our TS-750 on, and we were in slack tide, you know, so where the tide coming in, going out, I mean, when it's slack, my wife in 100 feet of water with that line, because it's a 100-foot line, we could see the knot at the rod tip, she hooked and landed a halibut in 100 feet deep. So the TS series in the 650 and 850 are really quite nice lines. But when you take the currents and off the rod tip, and then you can see the angle of the line, if the line is angling off your rod tip, then you're not down, you know, like say you had 100 feet of line on, but if it's angled, you're not down 100 feet. You may be down 50 or 60 feet or whatever. But when the current is slack, that line could go straight down. So you could get down 100 feet. And I really haven't tried the Chuck and Duck, but I don't know that it's going to, I mean, the Chuck and Duck and the Super Magnum is the heaviest sink tip in the world, second to none. And it's so heavy in grains, I've been afraid to weigh it. You know, I mean, it's like 12 feet of mass. It's tungsten impregnated in the coating, the most you could get in the 12 feet. The behind that is a floating. So I'm not so sure that would hold it back from sinking down. I don't think so, because that line drops like a rock, and it might just drag that floating line right down with it. So the Super Magnum might be something for him to try, depending on how deep he wants to go. But I'd say the TS Series 650, 750, he's probably going to enjoy them, and they are one-piece line, so it doesn't have any knots or anything, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, fly fishing at 100 feet deep, that's pretty... That's something I haven't done, so new experience.
You bet.
Joe Puglisi in Newcastle, California asks, how important is using an integrated sinking tip line as opposed to a full sink, both being similar in sink rate and used in stillwater fishing? He says, I've been told that the angle of the line's descent makes a difference on presentation.
Well, you know what? I mean, a lot of people will say that, but I think that using the integrated sink tip lines where you have a floating there, that's what we do, and honestly, we've been quite successful, you know, with fishing. It makes casting much easier, it makes fishing much easier, and knowing that your sinking section is going to drag your floating line down too. So in reality, you're just extending. Say you have a 24-foot head on there. I'm just throwing that out as a number. It could be 30 or 22 or whatever. But when you think about that line going down, and it sinks very evenly, you know, okay? Now when it's going down, it's bringing your floating line down with a sinking. And when you're retrieving, you'll see some of your floating line under. So I don't believe that there's any difference. And a full sinking line to me is harder to retrieve. You have to bring it in closer, then you got to work it back out again, then you do your recast. But when you have these integrated lines with floating and sinking, you'll find your fishing time is just way more easy and productive by doing that. I mean, you're casting, and especially if you see a fish rise and, oh my God, I got to get it up and I got to cast it back out again, they're so much easier to cast out.
Okay. Now, let's see here. Duke again. Duke, he keeps popping up in New York.
Hey, there is Duke again.
I use a braided loop at the tip of my fly line to connect the leader loop-to-loop connection. I'm having a hard time keeping my line tip floating only after a few casts. I tried cleaning the tip and using fly line dressing on it, but performance did not seem to improve much. Any suggestions?
You know, I would actually advise Duke to take the braided loop off and just put a like a nail knot on there, because the braided loop does have a little bit of weight to it. Once it gets wet, you know, it does sink. So it's dragging his tip down for him, you know. So I would just put a, take your butt section and splice it onto your line. And I think that overall, if he knows how to learn to do a good nail knot, that he'll be happier with the performance.
Okay, great. Phil, in Calabasas, California, I'd like to know more about fly lines to use from a fishing party boat in inshore salt waters in Southern California, especially shooting heads, line weights, rod weights, fishing for kelp, bass, bonito, and some pelagics.
Uh-huh. I've done all of that. What I think that he would like is either the TS series, but we also make a salt water in that type of series that for the little warmer waters that would be perfect. And it's a TWWS, I believe it is, warm water. And that line would shoot really well for him and then cast and sink nicely. So it's kind of like the T-Series, TS-Series, but in warm water.
Okay.
So it's the TWWS if he looks it up on our website.
Okay. When you say warm water, now are you differentiating that from tropical water?
No, tropical I would say is warm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know there in Southern California, you're kind of, on the margin, right? Whether you're in
so
tropical or you're still in the cold water.
Well, he could either use the TS series, which is the Dacron braided trolling line in the center, or he could go to the tropical one, and I believe that he'll have good performance out of either one. So it's really, if he thinks he's going to go down from Southern California down to Mexico, then I would say, you know what, maybe get the TWWS.
Mm-hmm.
Because that way he could use them both places and not worry about them.
Vince in Virginia asks, he said, I'd like to see line manufacturers produce a tropical, visible floating line with a 10-foot clear floating tip. The Monic Phantom line comes close, but their green section disappears with any surface glare. Do you have any solution for Vince?
You know what? I'm finding out from a lot of the line manufacturers, and Monic was the first one to do the clear lines, the clear floating lines.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that to some degree, the line manufacturers are having difficulty going from a colored line to a clear tip and have it be all floating. Do you know what I'm saying? Where
mm-hmm.
at that point, the transition from floating to clear floating is not very easy to do, and they're all struggling to figure that out. So the clear tips then will be intermediate or slow sinking. And so his question is, it's also been my question, is why can't they do a colored line and a clear tip floating? And we're working in that direction, but I don't believe it's been really accomplished quite well at this point.
So it is a technical challenge at this
point. Exactly. That's
a
good
value motive in what he's wanting there?
I do, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Thomas in St. George, Utah asks, do you prefer one color over another color for line colors, or do you think it makes any difference at all?
Well, I've always liked the brighter colors in like a floating line, because I love to see them. And if you're a good enough caster, you don't have to worry about spooking the fish. I mean, it's about, again, back to presentation. So I like orange, I like green, I like a blue. It doesn't really make a difference. I would way prefer those colored lines over white, because white just kind of blends in. It's like years ago when they used to have backing and it was only white. We were the first ones to come out with the fluorescent orange backing. And now we have blue, we have orange, we have chartreuse, and we have hot pink. So, and everybody now is tuned into the colored backing. And I don't know, I'm just a bright color guy.
Okay.
But not in the sinking. That's got to be dark,
Okay. Okay. One final question. I'm going to lump a bunch of them together here, but we did get several questions in on care and maintenance of lines. Terry in British Columbia, Doug in British Columbia, Duke in New York, Dave in Virginia, all asking about what do you use to clean lines? How should you store them to get the most life out of them? And what can you do to extend their functional
sure.
life?
Well, I can answer that actually quite quickly. We have a line cleaner, but you could take mild dishwater soap, lukewarm water, and you could wipe your lines down. Armor-All is not really that good because it ultimately will dry and crack all the fly lines. And when you first put Armor-All on, you'll think, holy mackerel, what did I do? This line is awesome. But it will dry and crack your line. So I would say don't do that. Just do a mild soap and water and clean your lines. And I don't clean my lines all that much. But if they do get some scum on there and stuff, you know, we'll actually clean them. But it's very simple. I don't think you really need to go out and buy some kind of special formula and do that. And clean them probably as least often as you can, unless you feel like it's not shooting and stuff like that, then, of course, do the mild soap.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, terrific. I think we've covered a lot of ground tonight. Unfortunately, time to wrap things up again. Time flies when you're having fun, and we've had our fun. So
you bet. Thank you, Roger.
Yeah, we stick with us here. Jim, we got to give away those great gifts you've offered up tonight and do a couple drawings. So we'll be back to give away that membership to the Federation, Fly Fusion magazine subscription, Jim's latest book, Cantide Saltwater Leader and Flyline. So stick with us, and we'll be right back, and we'll give those prizes away.
Thank you.
Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website at www.familyties.com. That's www.familyties.com, T-Y-E-S, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what do you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd sure appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away the prizes, and the first two that we do give away are randomly selected from our show's registration database. So if you didn't register for the show yet tonight, it's a little late, but make sure you do it for our next show so you have a chance to win some of these wonderful prizes. Now, if you're the lucky winner tonight, we'll contact you after the show to provide you with the information on how to receive your gifts. So look for an email to you from us. Now, we'll be giving away first the one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And if you want to learn more about the Federation, go to their website at www.fedflyfishers.org. www.fedflyfishers.org. So let's see. We'll do a selection here from our database. And our winner is Melvin Kellogg in Colorado. Melvin Kellogg in Colorado. You just got yourself a one-year membership. If you already have one, we'll get it extended, and congratulations on that. It's always great to have a membership to the Federation. And our winner of the one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine is Martin Coleman. Martin Coleman. I know Martin's name. He asks a lot of questions. So, Martin, congratulations, and you get a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So, again, a great magazine. If you want to learn more about that, go to flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com. Okay, now we need to give away a few of these wonderful gifts from Jim and Donatini here. And thanks again, Jim, for providing these gifts.
Very welcome.
Very generous of you. So, I'm going to come up with a couple of questions, and this one, we'll do two questions here, and the first question, the first place winner will get Jim's book and Fly Fishing Great Waters, a wonderful coffee table book, a lot of great pictures, and kind of a chronicle of Jim's fly fishing life, so I know you'll enjoy that. And the runner-up on that will get the Teeny Hand-Tied Saltwater Leader. So that's what we'll do on the first one. And the question is, what makes the Bruce Chard saltwater fly lines so outstanding? There were two things that Jim talked about that made the difference in the Bruce Chard fly lines and why they cast so much better than other fly lines. So what are those two things? I hope that's not too difficult here, Jim, but we'll see.
Sure.
See if somebody's paying attention here. Now we're checking the incoming answers here and see if we get one. I don't think this one's it. The answer is straight line. I don't think that's what we're looking for, is it, Jim?
No.
And here's one. He says taper and coating.
That's it.
That's it. Mac Brown.
Oh, good job.
Yeah, Mac Brown, Bryson City, North Carolina, just won Jim's book, Fly Fishing Great Waters. So, Mac, congratulations. Glad you're paying attention there. And please send me your information, your contact information, name, address, phone number, email address, that kind of thing. You can use the same text box you just used or send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com. So let's see if somebody else got it right. Well, next runner-up, which is for the hand-tied leader, is Bill Corder in Evans, Georgia. And he says core and coding as well. So, well, he said core and coding. I guess that's not right, is it? No, we were looking for her. I'm sorry there, Bill. Let's see if a couple more here. If nobody else, how about taper and slickness? Would that qualify?
Well, you know what? I think that would qualify.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So Eric K. in Lebanon, Pennsylvania got a bit closer on that one. Sorry about that, but I misread the answer on that first one. Taper and slickness, or which is coding. So, Eric, you get that tapered leader. And, again, send me your information either to info@askaboutflyfishing or put it in the text box and send it that way. Okay, so the final prize here is the teeny fly line, and you get to pick this. So if you win this, then you'll just need to write us and say, go out to the teeny site and figure out which one you want, and then just let us know, and Jim will get that off to you. So let me clear my queue here, Jim. Okay, so the next question is, when Jim was talking about lake fishing, we were talking about integrated and full sinking lines, and which one did Jim recommend, integrated or full sinking, and why? Why did he recommend one of those? And let's see if we get an answer for this one. Again, a two-part question here, but you've got to make them work for that line. That line's worth a lot of money. So
you're putting pressure.
Yeah. So let's see. Got the first part here, answer, but the second part's missing. I want to know why this is. Integrated clear tip for better control. Not quite, I think, what we were looking for, is it, Jim? You're the expert, so I'm going to...
Well, better control is part of it. Is that for the second part, or...?
Yeah, the second part. What is it? Which one do you recommend, and why?
Well, it is the integrated.
Right.
And you do have better control, and easier for pickup and casting again.
Okay, so, well, the better control, I was looking for that for easier to cast, so...
Yeah.
You want to give it to this guy?
Let's do.
Okay, Scott Higashi in Rockland, California. You just got yourself a fly line. So, Scott Higashi, send me your information, and we'll get... And be sure to go out to the teeny site and figure out which line you like, and be sure you write Jim a nice thank you note after you receive it, because that's a great gift to have, so... All right, well, that's it, Jim. Hey... Really appreciate you being on the show. We ran over a bit tonight, but that's all right. As long as we're getting good information out there.
Well, I really appreciate having the opportunity, and I appreciate everybody that participated.
Yeah, well said, because everybody sent in some great questions. Again, we didn't get to all of them. We tried our best, but we really appreciate the audience sending in those questions. Well, thanks, Jim, and hopefully we can talk again sometime.
You bet. Thank you. Have a good night.
Sure.
Bye.
Our next broadcast will be on September 1st at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and on that show we'll interview Josh Mead, and our topic for the show will be Pere Marquette River, brown steelhead and salmon. Josh, an Orvis-endorsed fly fishing guide, has fished the famous rivers of Michigan since he was 5 years old. Learn about fly fishing the Pere Marquette River, where huge brown steelhead and salmon make their home. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Front Range Anglers, Royal Gorge Anglers, Housatonic River Outfitters for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673 extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673 extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.